I'd like to talk about dukkha. It's the Pali word for suffering or distress. It's the first noble truth in the Buddhist teachings, and it's something that we deal with moment to moment. Even when we're talking about being mindful moment to moment, often what we're mindful of is the stuff in our life that's kind of driving us nuts. And the training is to notice more than that. So there's the big dukkhas, like birth and death and aging and illness, and all of those things that really can take our breath away and put us in a state of disease so immediately. And then there's the smaller kinds of sufferings that actually there's so many of them that they multiply throughout the day and they become a normal way that we describe our lives. I call that damn it dukkha.
Damn it.
It's those moments where you just, in a second, it's just, you know, the Buddha talks about there's a type of dukkha that's called not getting what you want. And that's the most pervasive form of dukkha that we experience. Not getting what we want, not getting what we expected. Stuff is not the way it should be. You know, it should have been different. Shoulda, woulda, coulda. All those things are day-to-day dukkhas that we've just been so conditioned to be used to dealing with day in and day out, not recognizing the ways that we are really constricted around it. Think about what happens when you say, damn it. You know, there's a clenching of the fist, there's a tightening of the body, the stomach goes into a knot. You know, the whole body contracts in one of those damn it dukkha moments. And we're so busy often looking at what's not the way we want it to be, that we're not in touch with the effect that the dukkha is actually having on the body. And the seeds that it plants that keeps us in the habit of doing the same things over and over again. But the fundamental underlying assumption in a damn it moment is that it shouldn't be this way. So I want to talk about that a little bit tonight. So I brought a little show and tell to make some points. This is oil and water. And you can see that this separates, right? So the oil is what we could refer to as the knowing mind, or the mind of awareness. The knowing mind in the teachings is an experience of it's this vast space, spacious awareness. It's a sky-like quality. It's weightless, it's motionless. And we can get a glimpse of this, usually, when there is a significant loss in your life. And those feelings where you find yourself in a place where there's just a sense of motionlessness, weightlessness, you're just suspended. There's a sense of suspension that's experienced. You've kind of entered into this place of the knowing mind. The knowing mind can also be glimpsed when you're at the end of an exhale, and just before you inhale, there's that space. Sometimes it's a tiny space. It's a space of suspension and vastness, and we're in between the activities of our lives when we are touching into the knowing mind. You can almost get the sense of the trapeze that are swinging from one thing you hold onto to the next. Just before you grab that other handle where you're holding onto something, right in between that space could be that space of the knowing mind. It's not the thing that you're knowing that's important here. It's the trail of it. It's like the absence of a thing itself that makes this knowing mind more palpable. We also experience it in moments of where we say it's surreal. Or we fall in love and we're in this weightless, spacious, suspended, you know, no self kind of place. And oftentimes we say things like we're in awe or it takes my breath away. And that's a sense of it. We may also taste into it a little bit when we have a soulful conversation with a dear friend and we've really taken a risk to be honest. It's not the act that reflects this knowing mind. It's the experience you have right at the end of it. That sense of wide openness that you touch into. This is the territory of the knowing mind. Groundless, formless, spacious, weightless. And the knowing mind does not interfere with the experiences we have in our lives. It's a non-interfering zone. So that's the knowing mind. That's the oil sitting at the top. And then there's the activity of the mind. That's all the stuff that appears in the knowing mind. So we've got the knowing mind that the sky is a sky-like quality. And then the activity of the mind is everything that appears in it. So you ever see those planes that form the big lines in the sky and then it creates designs or words and then it fades away? That's an activity of mind. That's appearing on the big screen of the knowing mind. It comes and it goes. The plane comes and it goes. The birds come and they go. Our thoughts come and they go. Our dukkha comes and it goes. So the activity of mind has to do with our patterns of consciousness, the ways we've come to know and believe and think, our habits of mind, the stuff we do with the personality, with the body, all of that is the activity of mind. The mind is noisy oftentimes. And like I said earlier, its job is to be busy 24/7 with activities, with plannings, with ideas, with creations. And you hear it said a lot in this tradition that the mind has no shame. It'll do anything to get your attention. So it's constant. And especially when you get quiet, it just takes over everything. That's activity of mind, not to be confused with the knowing mind. It's like oil and water. And this is dukkha. Okay? We have dukkha when we don't understand that there's a difference between activity of mind and the knowing mind. Things get really confused, jumbled together. We cling, we over-identify. It can be pretty messy. So that's what dukkha looks like. When we're so intertwined with the activity of mind that we are not able to see clearly, to know that we're more than the activities in our mind. That's dukkha. Dukkha is about clinging to the point of staying solidly identified. Whether it's in a thought or the way your body looks or whatever it might be, holding on to a loved one, relationship, whatever. notions about the weather. Why is it cold again tonight? So I have this little cartoon here, and it says, it's a monk sitting with his teacher, and it says, "Oh, master, is it proper for a monk to use email?" And the monk says, "Sure, as long as there are no attachments." So this is attachment. All right. And then mindfulness. Mindfulness practice, and you were saying, Jim, earlier, it's hard to know sometimes the difference between mindfulness and awareness. Mindfulness practice is settling down and observing so that you can see the difference between activity of mind and the knowing mind. That's what mindful is. It means you have to get still enough so that the separation or the clarity of mind can reveal itself. When you're over-identified with the dukkha, it's hard to see clearly. You're stuck. But when you get yourself still, which is why a practice is so helpful, we begin to see that, oh, there's the activity of mind. Of course, there's much more to learn about this. But there is a distinction between the knowing mind and the activity of mind. And when we don't know that, we suffer. We have more dukkha in our lives, more distress. The mindfulness that's important here is not just pausing to see that it's separate, but it's looking at the dukkha that appears in our lives from the lens of things are impermanent, things are impersonal, and things are unreliable or uncontrollable. And that what we do next really does matter. We may not be able to do anything about what's appearing right in this moment, but what we do next has everything to do with the karmic seeds we plant that will make the difference in more flower blooms of dukkha appearing in our lives or in our next lives. So it doesn't take very long to see the distinction. We just have to calm ourselves and take the position and have a practice that supports a clarity of mind that supports us in not suffering. It doesn't mean that the struggles won't present themselves. What it means is that we'll be able to discern over time that there's other ways to hold our experience other than to be so tied to them. Krishnamurti, the Indian philosopher, said, "The highest form of human intelligence is to observe yourself without judgment." That's a quality of looking and seeing when we get ourselves still. Looking without judgment. Looking with our hearts. Soft awareness and kindness. The Buddha said that nothing whatsoever is to be clung to as I or mine. Any form of tight holding is suffering. Anytime you find yourself just really pissed off or really tight or really convinced or convicted, there's some bit of clinging happening, some bit of suffering happening. And Joseph Goldstein said that we don't have to let go. We simply have to not hold on. May the dammit dukkha moments that you have in your life be a form of awakening for you and provide a stimulus for your practice.